Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Bruno Barron, Carol Felsenthal, John McCarron, and Judy Bartopinka. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Happy Father's Day, everyone. Our phone lines open toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Great to have you with us. Tonight, we continue a discussion that we began last week on this program. For those that did not see or hear our program last week, we were the first national show that had an opportunity to respond to Edward Snowden. His identity had been revealed just a couple of hours before we went on the air. Obviously, he continues to be the focal point of this national security controversy, or I would say more than a controversy, involving the National Security Agency and their ability to listen in and monitor phone calls and emails and everything else. So tonight, we've asked at the end of last week's program whether you viewed Edward Snowden as a hero or as a traitor. Obviously, in the week that has followed, there are more people that are popping up saying that perhaps he was a traitor. Former Vice President Dick Cheney was on the programs today on Fox News saying that he definitely is a traitor, and a number certainly of the establishment leaders of the country have all sort of gravitated to that word. John McCarron joins us. John is an adjunct professor at DePaul University, longtime reporter for the Chicago Tribune, columnist, distinguished in his field. Traitor or hero, John?
I think both of those are too extreme. I think he's in violation of the oath he took. I assume even as a contractor, he must have had to sign some non-disclosure thing. So he's probably, what would be the word, a perjurer or whatever. So I wouldn't say, a traitor. I don't think he was out to harm the United States necessarily. I'm guessing, and all we can do is guess, is that he was thought he was doing God's work by doing this.
Judy Bartopinka also joins us. She is the state comptroller of Illinois, ran for Republican governor a couple of years ago. Judy, your thought, hero or traitor?
Probably in line with what John is saying, a reneger on whatever his contractual relationship was. I'm amazed that a man of such low stature in terms of the operation would have that kind of clearance and the ability to be able to do that. But I think he thought he was doing the right thing. I don't think he thinks of himself as a traitor. I don't think he, more of a whistleblower is I think what he thinks of himself as. And I'm distraught that he's in Hong Kong of all the places to pick, because that starts all sorts of conspiracy theories on what and where he did what he did.
Right. And the intelligence community has already begun the process of sort of besmirching him because of that, in addition to a variety of other reasons why maybe he should be besmirched. Carol Felsenthal, you're a reporter, you are a writer, you have an opinion on virtually everything. Where do you come down on this, Edward Snowden?
I'm always really interested in biography, and his biography interests me. And one of the things that really has bothered me from the beginning of this is the constant refrain, he's a high school dropout. Actually, he has his GED. He is obviously an extremely intelligent young man. Whether what he did was right or not, I thought Bob Schieffer on CBS had an interesting comment about him, which is that he should have blown the whistle and then he should have stayed here and faced the consequences. And he said Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King didn't run away to Hong Kong and not be willing to face the music. One thing that's also interesting, you know, at the very beginning, there were many stories, some of them quasi-salacious, about his girlfriend who practices pole dancing in Hawaii. But you don't know anything about his family. I'm really, his father's a Coast Guard officer. His mother is, I think, does something with a bank or something, but she's in some more conventional field. And they you would think they'd be parked outside, those parents.
Yeah.
Does he have siblings?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And the connection to China and the fact that he let the Chinese know that the U.S. is hacking into their systems is a very serious matter.
Yeah.
And the fact that Obama had just met with the leader of China
right.
and totally pulled the rug out from under him.
Very
actually, that was one of the things that we said last week in the program, because there had been in the initial interview that he did with The Guardian, he made that particular comment. And so I said that this would be a good test of the summit meeting in Palm Springs as to whether or not the president might be able to talk the Chinese into sending him back. But I don't think there's much chance of that, given the public demonstrations that are going on in the streets of Hong Kong and the fact that around the world he is viewed as a hero to some. Bruno Barron also joins us from the Heartland Institute. Libertarian thinker, what do you think about this guy?
I think, not to pull quantum physics on your audience, but I think it's conceivable that a person can be both a hero and potentially a traitor at the same time, depending on
your... At least to different people, that's for sure.
at least to different people, but also, let's put it this way, some of the stuff that he did may have outed a program that might be beneficial, and he might be sparking a debate that needs to be sparked in this country. So,
that's his goal. That's his stated goal.
And quite frankly, we don't even know his motives. I mean, the fact of the matter is that in today's day and age, I don't know how many people are familiar with the movie Wag the Dog. All kinds of stuff could be happening under the surface that none of us have. You know, we could read all the articles in the world and be very well versed in this and still not know a lot of the things that are happening. The outing of this stuff could have been a operation to wean the people into what's happening.
Is anybody at this table surprised by this revelation?
No, not at all.
Surprised at all. And by the way, for those that didn't hear the show last week, or probably 15 times that I've said this in the last 30 years of this program, in 1975, Henry Hyde, a Republican in Illinois, member of Congress, who was on the House Intelligence Committee, told me during an interview on radio that the NSA had the ability to listen in on every phone conversation in America in 1975.
Before computers.
They had computers, but
not
as solid.
They had one computer in a huge room.
It was
in its infancy. But the other thing is, if you look at what happened after September 11, 2001, the NSA was under the hammer for not... being more technologically adept and collecting information and connecting the dots, and they were being lambasted by Congress. So if you look back at those comments, it looks like the NSA did exactly what people wanted.
Go ahead, Judy.
Polls still show that the majority of people still think it's a good idea.
Right.
You know, that they feel safer because it's going on and they don't feel threatened by it. I, for one, do. I feel
do
threatened
too.
By
I
it.
I do, too, because if you get a president in office who has the character, say, of a Richard Nixon, or who's a very vindictive guy and grows to detest his enemies, then what's to stop a little sneak peek at somebody finding out that some guy who's married and immoral,
look what
moralist
J. Edgar Hoover
is going to porn websites or something like that.
But it's also, I mean, you know, I don't think anybody's going to defend Richard Nixon here, but again, this also comes at a time when there's great concern about where the IRS investigation or that malfeasance began. Did it begin with two lowly people in Cincinnati, or did it go higher up the ladder? We don't know the answer to that, but again, that'll be more for our discussion. 1-800-723-8289. Edward Snowden, is he a hero, a traitor, or somewhere in between? Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289. Top intelligence officials yesterday, you probably know this news, they did say that these two controversial data collection programs that are run by the National Security Agency, which is what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks on this program, they did stop potential terrorist plots in the United States and more than 20 other countries. That is what they are alleging, that gathered information. And they also, the information that they do gather, is the name and phone number where a phone number started and where it ended, and all the records, which are basically phone records, business phone records, those are the records that they say that after 5 years they destroy. That's one aspect of the program, is the gathering of the content. They call that the Verizon aspect of this. And then there's the PRISM program, and the PRISM program deals more with the internet and listening to or reading emails from those that originate overseas into the United States. Those are the two programs that we are aware of at this particular moment. But again, you have, and it's something we've talked about on this program for a long, long time, ever since, 9-11. Every Sunday night, we used it talking about during the campaign, the Bush administration was protecting the American people, and there wasn't another attack. And then the Obama administration had that same record. Now, again, there were incidents. You had the Fort Hood incident. You have other incidents like that. You had the attempt. You had attempts. But for the most part, I think Republicans and Democrats, and certainly the vast majority of the American people, I think had a level of comfort that their government was protecting them. And we're now finding out that one of the reasons why maybe they have been successful in protecting us, which is what the intelligence community is now saying, that without these programs, they would not have been able to stop certain things that probably would have been far more devastating even than what happened in Boston a couple of months ago. So this is where we are. I want to go back to something that a couple of you mentioned at the beginning, and that is, because he chose to go to Hong Kong, does that raise suspicion? So that maybe he was working with the Chinese, comforting the Chinese are comfortable with him. Or Bruno, do you think he just felt safer there, just his personal security?
It pretty much calls into question. I mean, I tend to think of him more positively than negatively. I think he's started a debate that needs to have been started. So
yes, do I.
I'm predisposed to support Snowden more than attack him. But it clearly calls into question his motives when he ends up going to China, the timing, the fact that there was a summit that was going on that same day. Like I said, there could be all kinds of stuff going on behind the scenes here that we only know like the first layer or the second layer of. Could be six layers deep. We don't know. Right.
And every week, I think we're going to know a little bit more. John, what do you, again, suspicious because he went to Hong Kong, or did he feel that that was probably the least likely country to extradite him back to the United States?
I don't know. Suspicious, and let me just say again, it raised my eyebrow. Why Hong Kong? And I mean, what exactly is your status now in Hong Kong? Obviously, it's gone over technically to China, but they're are exercising freedoms in Hong Kong that they're not able to do in Beijing, I can guarantee
you. A lot of expats there, too.
And so, it seems to me he should have, or he might have gone to Sweden or one of those places that we usually associate with, freedom and non-extradition.
Cheryl?
He was talking about going to Iceland for a while.
That's where he wants to go.
Yes, and then also the Russians, a spokesman for Putin, invited him to come to Russia and said we would welcome him in Russia, which I thought was really interesting because the relations between the U.S. and the Russians are in such a prickly, difficult point for President Obama. It was kind of hitting him below the belt, I thought. And, in Hong Kong, there were protesters out on the street or demonstrators out on the street supporting him,
right,
but they numbered in the hundreds. It was not some
millions,
big welled-up movement. And I think people in Hong Kong are probably worried about mainland China and being watched because it's free, but it's not really free. So
when you have Putin inviting him to come to Russia, and you have the demonstrators in the street, although obviously that's a drop in the bucket, neck of the woods or world, it seems to me that he can't control others trying to provide him with asylum. What it does is with each one of those overtures that comes, it raises the visibility and the possibility of the intelligence apparatus of the United States to basically create a scenario that this guy was indeed a traitor, that this was all planned in advance. The fact that he also acknowledged that the United States, you know, hacks into the Chinese, which, again, I don't think it should be a surprise to anybody either, that it moves the needle on the issue of whether or not he's a traitor, and it sort of overlooks at least the stated reason why he did what he did was he just felt that it was something that needed to be discussed and he wanted to make it public. Judy?
Yeah, I think he really comes to it rather simply, and we make a big to-do about it, but then his going off to China starts the conspiracy theories. Russia, heck, if I were Putin, I'd throw that invitation out there too. It just kind of stirs the slop a little bit more. I mean, why not? Walk away, let it go.
Come to Cuba.
Oh, sure. I mean, it just, what does it mean? Nothing. He probably won't go there. He'll probably maybe wind up in Iceland and somewhere go down in the annals of history far less than Benedict Arnold.
Don't you think, first of all, when was the last time we heard from him? When did he last make?
They can't find him. They don't know where he's at.
When did he last make a statement?
Last Sunday.
For all we know, I mean, I would assume that the CIA and other intelligence agencies would be able to put their hands on him and find him. He must be staying in a private home.
Said in his interview, which was made, you know, it was released 2 hours before our show last week. He said that he did fear for his life.
Right.
He knows the power of the American intelligence operation.
They can
make him disappear.
Right, and that's why I'm interested in the parents, because I think this is a big deal, and I think there is going to be an attempt made to, with the CIA, be able to influence him by somehow getting access to his family or the people who he cares about. I don't know. Maybe I've read too many spy novels,
I don't think that's a big leap. I mean, if you're trying to,
right?
You know,
but I think he's too big and noisy now to disappear. He's not going to disappear.
He also says that he has a lot more info and a lot more startling revelations up his sleeve. Is that just talk or does he mean it?
I'm sure Glenn Greenwald, who's the Guardian reporter,
interesting. Yeah,
he's probably holding on to all kinds of things. And this is the same technique that was used by the guy who outed the Acorn people with their advice. I mean, they had one video, and then they waited for Acorn to say this was a one-off that doesn't really happen at all everywhere, and then they just outed video after video. So they're waiting for the NSA, or they're waiting for someone to say this is all good, and then they're going to say, well, here's some more. And
well, the information, again, your point is, we do not know as much about his parents as we do about his sexual proclivities, about his girlfriend, the pole dancer, about the fact that he was a college dropout, about the fact that he loves Krispy Kreme donuts after having sex. The stories that are online, I mean, they have blog postings of him. They have pictures of him with his pants half down. I mean, the operation that has already been done that's out on the internet right now as we speak tonight, I mean, the profile of this guy is a young 20-something-year-old guy.
29.
He's 29
and he
now.
29. Doesn't use Facebook or Twitter, though. He's way beyond us.
I don't know if I would anymore either.
Right.
But the point is that they go back. They're posting pictures of him when he was 22 years old.
Right.
So I'm saying there is an operation that is actively, aggressively, for the last week since this guy became known, of getting information out there about this guy.
And it's kind of information, too, that will make him look strange.
And
kind of an outcast and a loner and anything you can build to it.
I don't know. You know, a 22-year-old that's bragging about his sexual prowess.
Not
I don't goofy. Know whether that's a big news.
Well,
I don't
what I think is hilarious about it is that you know, you go right back to the NSA and to the federal government and say, yeah, and you're the bozos who hired him. I mean, the fact of the matter is,
and paid him
$200,000 a year. You know, like the NSA does this dump today Friday and says that they don't give us any information about the attacks that they've prevented, and maybe they shouldn't.
They did but a little bit.
A little bit, but at the same time,
supposed to do more tomorrow.
Russia told the security apparatus of this country to watch out for the Tsarevs, and yet they were able to pull off the Boston bombing. I think the big key here is that our entire intelligence community is far too reliant on technology, and they think that they can do all this fancy Facebook stuff and they can do all this fancy Prism and looking into the back end of all of our communications and metadata. And the fact is that the real rubber meets the road in the intelligence community in human intelligence, and we almost do nothing about that because we want to rely on all kinds of fancy technology.
Well, you, by the way, you said, as you frequently do, you said something really important in your answer to that, and that is because of this new story that is now dominating everything, we don't have, at least I have not read, any conclusive evidence or story about where was the ball dropped between the Soviet Union or the Russians who warned us about these Boston bombers. Where did that fall through the crack?
Right.
We don't know. I mean, clearly, I mean, when that story broke, I mean, that to me, that was the interesting piece of it, is we allegedly knew about these guys, and we did nothing about it, just as, frankly, in 1963, the Dallas office of the FBI knew about Lee Harvey Oswald, and did nothing about it in advance of the assassination of President Kennedy. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Let me introduce our guest. John McCarron is here, longtime reporter, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of their editorial board for many, many years, now an adjunct professor in journalism at DePaul University. Bruno Barrett also joins us. He is with the Heartland Institute. His pet topic usually is education reform, but he's a libertarian thinker, always good and always a good conversationalist to be with us on our broadcast. Carol Felsenthal also joins us. She is a blogger. She works for Chicago Magazine, and she is interested in so many different things, but she's one of the premier bloggers, certainly coming out of the Chicagoland area. Carol, always nice to have you with us. Also an author of a book about Bill Clinton. And Judy Bart Topinka joins us. She is the incumbent state comptroller of the state of Illinois. For many, many years, she was the state treasurer. She was watching where the money was and went, and we'll talk about that in the next hour. And also, she was the Republican candidate for governor running against Rod Blagojevich several years ago. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. One other aspect of this story that has come out is that, obviously, for the last week, I mean, if you are Facebook or Microsoft or Apple or any one of the search engines, you know that your records have been, asked for by the government. There is a FISA court, which, again, makes it mandatory for them to respond to these inquiries. They are very concerned because Facebook received between 9,000 and 10,000 requests from all government entities, from local to federal, in the last 6 months of 2012. Now, when this story broke, all the heads of all of those major companies, they vehemently denied that they were cooperating with the government. Last week on this program, someone who worked for Hewlett-Packard said that he was not surprised that they all vehemently denied awareness of this program, because to acknowledge that they were aware of it would have been a violation of the court order, which goes with it a gag order that you're not supposed to respond to it. The companies, however, went back to court, and they went to the NSA this week. They didn't go to court. They went to the NSA this week. And they have been given permission to make new but still very limited revelations about government orders to turn over data used in this particular case. And one of the attorneys, this was an attorney for Google, and obviously all these companies now, I mean, they are such an integral part of our lives. Their audience is, although it is mass, it is certainly focused with a younger audience that's used to this new social media and, publishing every picture that you can imagine, putting it on Facebook and sharing all kinds of personal information. That is the new lifestyle of life in America. And now you have a company that is responsible for taking all of that information, and they are making it available, not willingly, but they are making it available because government comes knocking on their door and says, here is an order. We want you, that we want this information. And they are responding to it. And one of the attorneys for Google said, we have always believed that it's important to differentiate between different types of government requests. We already publish criminal requests separately from national security letters. Lumping the two categories together would be a step back for users. Our request to the government is clear to be able to publish aggregate numbers of national security requests, including FISA, that's the Federal Intelligence Security Administration or court, disclosures separately. So now you have the companies. And I want to get everybody's reaction now about the companies. And let me ask the same question before. Is anybody surprised that any of these companies would ever have the guts and the gonads to stand up and say no to the government when they ask them for records? Judy?
Oh, no, they're not going to do that. I mean, there's business to be had, there's profits to be made, and they, you know, who's going to wind up in court all the time and get hassled? No, they're not going to stand up. They'll fold, and they did.
And when caught, they will deny. Carol?
Right. And number one, I am a totally upstanding citizen and loyal American. Mm-hmm. But over the last couple of years, I've stopped putting things in emails. I don't do that anymore. You know, back in the day when if somebody sent you a letter in the U.S. mail and you might have decided, well, I don't want to respond to this letter because I don't want to see it in print, and you might have even torn up that letter. I don't put important stuff in email anymore. But email is a passé technology in any case. I have three children, the youngest of whom is 21. He never writes emails. What happens to all those texts that go back and forth? And I would bet you anything that the Boston bombers were much more adept at, you know, fingers flying across that keyboard and texting. Younger people, or people in their 20s, like this Snowden guy, they don't write emails anymore anyway. And what they show you, what they are doing under PRISM, is they're showing you the subject, who it went to, and who it's from, but they can also get into the body of the text.
My son, who is an Army JAG, he's an Army lawyer, and the first thing he said, Mom, it's all subpoenable, so don't, I'm literary. I like to write emails. I like to write.
Right.
He says, stop the writing. Short sentences, and yes, no, and stop. He says, it's all subpoenable. Lay off of it. And I agree with him. I don't do it anymore.
Right.
I just don't do it anymore.
What we're talking about right now, to me, is very chilling, because we are already, we're living in a free society, and you're worrying about what you write, and you're not putting things, you're not telling everything that you want to ask someone.
Generally, because I'm such a klutz that I send it to the wrong
person.
Let's back up and acknowledge that there's a judicial process behind what these people are being asked to do. That if the NSA is going to Google and saying, we want to look at so-and-so's emails, I think part of the deal is that they've got some sort of writ from this FISA court, this court that meets in secret.
Yes, right.
And they looked...
That virtually always says yes.
They looked at... Well, you're saying that. I'm not so sure. I have people like, Jim Zagel in Chicago is... You know, a very reputable judge.
No. But I'm not.
You just said though they always say yes. I don't know that.
Well, last week it was revealed, and again I may be a little bit off on my number.
Sometimes they kick it back and say narrow this down.
488 of 489 requests from FISA were approved by the court.
But some were amended though. I mean,
I don't know that.
They
you
say,
may
no,
be right.
This is too broad. Just ask for Abdul's email. You know, so things get narrowed down. But to get back to my point, I mean, I'm okay with this as long as I understand there are, you know, 9 wise men in Washington from the federal judiciary who have looked at the evidence that would bring someone under suspicion and say, yeah, okay, let's go ahead and look at the content of those emails.
But would you acknowledge, and then I know Bruin's chomping at the bit, would you acknowledge, because what you have is you have judicial, legislative, and you have executive branch oversight of this program. They are all involved, okay? We know that congressional oversight of anything is haphazard at best, okay? We also know, based on the IRS controversy, we know that allegedly there can be two guys sitting in some office somewhere, maybe in Cincinnati, if they have the ability to listen in on every phone conversation or email, as Edward Snowden alleges that he can do from his computer. I mean, all of the laws and all of the things that the legislative branch has put in place and the judicial branch has put in place to protect our civil liberties, it all means nothing if the technological ability is there, because curiosity will kill the cat. And it will be, and someone will move on it.
Bruno,
try and make 3 points really quickly here. Number one, the idea that metadata is less important than actually reading the email or listening to the phone conversation is false. The fact is that if they know that you called a 911 number and a suicide hotline from the top of the Golden Gate Bridge, they know something about what you're doing and they know something very important about what you're doing. Next, the entire process. And I've heard this entire thing. You know, it's like, well, all three branches have given a rubber stamp on this, so that's checks and balances. Who says there? Where do we know that all of these checks and balances have really taken place? And they basically tell, well, we've got checks and balances, but we can't tell you what those are. And then third thing, what they're doing in like one order gave them millions and millions of data, pieces of data from Verizon, and we just had the NSA this weekend say, oh yeah, and our analysts can go dip into that pool of data. They don't have to do a court order to dip into that pool of data. They've already got the court order for the millions of records. The NSA analysts...
By the way, they said yesterday that they only looked at 300 inquiries. They only looked at 300 things.
And from the beginning of time, and this is something very important for the audience to understand, from the beginning of time, since the rule was don't eat from this tree, governments have abused their powers. And our founders decided to create a system where we could hopefully shackle government, and it has not been shackled. So the fact of the matter is every single government power under the sun in the history of time has been abused. Witness digging into reporters' records, witness the IRS scandal that's going on right now. And all of these things are connected to what's going on with the NSA. That a bunch of analysts like Eric Snowden can dip into our data and check up on us unbidden at any time. That's what's happening, and I don't think that's a good thing.
Judy?
I'm totally in agreement on that. It just, there's too much stuff out there with too many people with security clearance who, like Snowden, may or may not have the wherewithal or the sense of responsibility or the understanding or whatever it takes to look into this and make something of it to get into it. And I don't like it, nor get rid of it.
When we come back, let's try to move forward and find out how do we draw a finer line so that at least the five of us around the table tonight are a little more comfortable. Back to you.
But this thing, so what?
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Carol, you wanted to make a comment about the reporter that broke this story in Washington Post, but this reporter with The Guardian.
We have such, in this country in general, short attention spans, I think. So last Sunday, Glenn Greenwald, the blogger, controversial man, an attorney, an extremely good reporter and a dogged reporter, was on every television show. And we were hearing about him, and his life was being picked apart. Now he's an invisible man. Well, where was Glenn Greenwald when he was doing all of these Sunday morning shows and interviews? He was in Hong Kong.
Right.
And I thought that was really interesting. And I, you know, if I had the wherewithal and I weren't working for Chicago Magazine, basically covering stuff that if he were a Chicagoan, I'd want to go find out much more about that, because I think that's
interesting. Well, he was in Hong Kong because 3 hours later he was interviewing Edward Snowden, and then it went on the air.
Right, but where is he now? We don't hear any more about him. I'm interested in that.
Well, I'm sure the FBI and the CIA know where he is.
Yeah, well, but I bet you he's in very close contact with Snowden, and we haven't heard from either of these guys. Greenwald hasn't been giving interviews. I just think it was an interesting juxtaposition.
One of the things, by the way, that came up that we discussed briefly last week was one paragraph in Edward Snowden's interview last week suggested that the goal of the NSA was to listen in on conversations so that they were privy to conversations and they were privy to behavior, following the behavior aspects. So to me, that goes well beyond a national security concern. I mean, everyone, the popular support, Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, I mean, the shock of 9/11, everybody wanted to be protected. We were willing to do virtually anything. Along comes the Patriot Act, which I think certainly needs to be reviewed, and it should be reviewed.
A little cleanup is in order.
A little cleanup is in order, you know, and you know, far enough distance away from 9/11. But one aspect of this a quote that I just attributed to an attorney for Google was he said, "We already publish criminal requests separately from national security letters." And I think most people, when you hear about the National Security Agency, you think of national security. You think of terrorists that are going to destroy us. But again, there are requests from government about criminal requests. So now you have this ability to listen in on phone conversations, intercept emails, and now it's for other forms of criminal investigations. So to juxtapose that to a concern we have about the IRS, well, why are we not listening in on conversations between a client and his accountant talking about filing a tax return? I mean, where does this stop?
Well, you could, Bruce, if you had a court warrant.
You could if you were just curious.
Probable
too.
Cause. You'd go before a judge and you get a warrant.
Okay, let's just. Okay. I agree with what you say. I also agree with what Judy said. And that is, all right, you have the people that are doing it according to the way in which the law was written.
Ta-da.
Granted. Okay. Then you have the renegades. You have the guys in Cincinnati, or you have them someplace
else.
Who
are themselves lawbreakers.
Well, they just want to look.
Who are themselves lawbreakers.
How many cops do you know look at license plates that don't have anything to do with what's going on
and they run the license plate.
You're not supposed to do that, but you do it.
What about the Supreme Court ruling that came down last week about DNA collection?
Sure.
So what does that allow law enforcement to do? It allows them to take that DNA, whether the person is convicted of something or not.
My question to this, Bruno, does this ability of government, even with a court order, as John suggested, or freelancers who don't go through the court system, but they know what can be done. And there's a lot of movies that have been based on that. You know, forget going to.
And if you know somebody, you can get it.
And you can. So the question is this: the idea of using this information that most people think is for national security, protecting us against terrorists, now it's being used to fight. It's a law enforcement tool,
right? My view on it is, you know, you go back to the Fourth Amendment, that we're secure in our persons against unreasonable search and seizure. There's a divide here that you have to think about. Okay, if you're walking around out in public and you run a red light, you don't have a right to run a red light. If a camera catches you, you're gonna get a ticket. You don't have a right to, if you're a criminal and they're after you, you don't have a right to walk into a football stadium and just watch the football game. If they have facial recognition and you're caught, they're going to catch you. So here's the question. Is everything we do online from our homes, we're inside our homes, we're supposedly protected against search and seizure, but everyone we email is known. Everyone we talk to on the phone is known. They can go and check out a web. They're literally capable of using your Facebook and everything else you do to create a social network of everyone you know and everybody
what
you contact.
What your grocery list is.
Yeah. And
what you had for dinner.
So are we still secure in our persons? And I actually think that Rand Paul is on the right track here. I don't agree with everything Rand Paul
does.
Surprise.
The libertarian thinks that Rand
Paul. I'm not
a Rand Paul fan, but I agree
with
Bruno.
I'm not even that much of a Rand Paul fan either on every issue, but here's the fact. We need to revisit the Fourth Amendment and decide whether we want to upgrade it to what it should be or
John,
whether we want to let it go.
Let's let John respond because he doesn't like that idea.
I just think that this can feed into libertarian paranoid fantasies. Maybe
like the IRS targeting groups.
Yeah. Well, really, do you think that it's such a huge leap from the IRS story to this NSA story when you already have those acknowledging that this is used for criminal prosecution? Is that a big leap, John?
I don't think anyone who's abusing this is breaking the law.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I'm
good with that. So if Mr. What's his name over there in Hong Kong, if he knows of anybody who's done this without judicial approval, he should give us those names, and by the way, on that subject,
I think, in fact, Marty Garrity, who was our conservative, who was here last week, he said that it was his thought that Snowden should be prosecuted. I mean, did he think that he was a traitor? No, but he thought that he should be prosecuted. I don't think too many people don't think he should be prosecuted. And we talked at the beginning of the broadcast.
If you want to be a profile in courage.
Be willing to fall on your sword. Anyway, we've got to pause. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, 1-800-723-8029. Your calls when we come back on the other side of news. Don't go away. From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Bruno Behrend, Carol Felsenthal, John McCarron, and Judy Bartopinka. Toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8029. That's 1-800-723-8029. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web at www.beyondthebeltway.com. We're talking about the NSA controversy, and it will probably be a focal point for many future broadcasts. We've got a lot of callers on the line. Let's go to Gene, listening to us in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Nice to hear from Texas tonight. Go ahead, Gene.
Hi, Bruce. Happy Father's Day, world. This is Singing Lady Banana Bread from Austin, Texas.
Yes, thank you very much. I remember your call.
Right. For the guests there that don't know I'm a regular caller, me and Bruce have had conversations just months ago, and I called in to say, I don't fear terrorists. I fear our government. And now, months later, there was a guest earlier that said, conspiracy, or kind of made fun of liberal thinking. And I'm thinking, you know what? The only guy right now on that panel that I feel has real common sense is the one that says there's six layers to this. We don't even know yet. It's the surface at this point. What I was actually calling, Bruce, do you remember that I was actually saying, who dropped the ball on the Boston bombing? And now is this all just, something to distract us? Because I stayed up that night when the shootout would happen at the boat. And then they said, we have a suspect in custody. At 3 in the morning, they showed a guy completely naked. They put him in the car. They had his genitals covered, and we never heard from him. And I'm not sure, but I think that's someone that ended up in the river. To see these IRS people partying, when my husband's a carpenter, I'm a housekeeper for high-end homes, million-dollar homes, and we work so hard, Bruce, and then to see, we pay taxes, and then to see people like that partying it up, and it seems like everyone is in bed over there in Washington right now. Everyone. It's a sad state. When my 91-year-old grandfather, we all voted for Obama, is so disappointed now. He's just like,
Gene, let me ask you the question that I asked in the last segment, though.
Okay.
Excluding Boston, we're going to take Boston out. But insofar as an organized, extensive plan to strike the United States in a terrorist way, we've been fairly successful since 2011. Would you acknowledge, as I think the U.S. intelligence community wants you to acknowledge, based on the release of their information yesterday, would you acknowledge that maybe one of the reasons why we have been relatively safe in this country is because of these programs, and they do protect us. They step over the bounds. A lot of Americans think they step over the bounds, and I would be one that would agree with that. But would you also acknowledge that they may have kept us safe?
Gosh, Bruce, I want to say that, but because the trust level has been broken, I just don't believe them. I don't believe those 20 cases. I would have to see it on paper. I worry for newspaper. You know, I just saw an old show on HBO the other day with the guy who runs Sundance, and it was about the Watergate. I can't remember the name of it. It was about newspaper men. And it gave me chills. I hadn't seen that movie in 20 years, and I'm seeing it now, and it's like, wow. It just, what's happening to us? That's my question. I don't trust this guy. I don't trust Obama. I voted for him. My family did. I'm a 49-year-old Mexican woman born and raised in Texas. You know that. My whole family, Hispanic. And my friends, I don't know where they're getting these surveys, but nobody here that I'm talking to thinks that that's a good idea what the NSA is doing. Nobody.
I thank you for your call. Go ahead, Carol. You wanted to make a point.
One of the attacks that the NSA said was stopped is one that I've always been fearful of as a person who has children living in New York mm-hmm. and spends a lot of New York, its time in New York, and uses the New York subway. Mm-hmm. That was one of the attacks that they claimed that they stopped. And that is a horrific idea because you're stuck and you're underground. And also, do you remember the Times Square guy who wanted a, and Times Square, if you've been there lately, it's just wall-to-wall people from all over the world. That was stopped. You know, I think that there is something to be said for giving up a little bit to keep your safety. Now, maybe short-sighted.
What's a little bit? Let's get to what more can we give up? Or is part of this, and maybe this is the positive thing, and maybe this is one of the goals of Edward Snowden. He wanted to have these discussions, and this is the second week in a row, and I think we're going to be doing this a lot more. I think congressional investigations, I think we're going to be talking about this subject for years.
I'm not very optimistic about the congressional investigations. First of all, I don't know when they're going to schedule them because we're supposed to be having investigations about the IRS. We're supposed to be having investigations about James Rosen of Fox News and what the Justice Department was doing with him.
It's all about government confidence.
And now we have this. And what I bet will come out of it. Now, one of the interesting things about it is that there's bipartisan support. You have both Dianne Feinstein, the Democrat of California, and you have Republicans.
Mike Rogers.
Mike Rogers, and there was a guy on Meet the Press this morning, Chambliss from Georgia. I can't think of his first name, but
Saxby.
Saxby. And he made a very reasonable case for keeping this thing going. Then you had another senator from Colorado, Udall, Mark, I think, yep. Udall, mm-hmm. who made an articulate case against it. But I bet what happens out of this whole thing, the bottom line is that they're going to put a lot of screws on and controls on these private government contracting companies like Booz Allen, that's the low-hanging fruit.
That's right. And Dianne Feinstein said they're going to do that. But I want to, from a historical standpoint, when Seymour Hersh on the front page of the New York Times in December of 1974 revealed that there was a government program of spying, there was a CIA program, and there was a DIA, the Defense Intelligence. When he revealed when you started to pull that thread apart, that thread led to congressional investigation after congressional investigation. It led to the Church Committee that looked into assassination attempts, our attempts as a government to assassinate a Fidel Castro, right. Things of that, to destabilize the government. It also revealed the relationship between the CIA and organized crime. It unveiled that unhealthy relationship. It unveiled the United States' role in trying to assassinate other foreign leaders. Once you start pulling this thread, those investigations and the conversations dominated the 1970s. From 1974 to 1978, that's what everyone was talking about in this country. And I'm telling you, we are on the verge of another four-year investigation where we look at ourselves and we say, what does our government do, and is it really protecting us? And we learn the dirty side of government.
Did it make any difference in presidential politics? Remember?
No.
It didn't. It certainly didn't. Yes. And remember, George H.W. Bush,
to some extent, it
was a former head of the CIA. Well, I just think that
now you've got everybody investigating, and there's major issues which now again can be put on the side.
But the issues are the issues are the same.
Investigations become the point in and unto themselves.
John.
Well, to Judy's point, we're talking about setting up a no-fly zone over Syria.
Yeah, and that's
why,
of importance
to me. Why aren't we
to
talking about that tonight? Frankly, why? Because we're talking about
that's secondary. Now.
Secrets and who's listening?
The immigration
on our
bill. Where is that?
We can talk about that when we come back. You're right. It is an important subject. Back shortly. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's go to Marvin listening to us in Gerald, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead, Texas. You're on the air.
Yeah, you were talking earlier about these programs have prevented all these attacks, and that's arguable, but that's beside the point. There's a saying that if it's stupid and it works, it's not stupid. But if it's unconstitutional and it works, it's still unconstitutional.
Say that again?
So your point is that these programs are unconstitutional, and these are programs that were developed by a bipartisan team of legislators. It was done in the wake when the American people were demanding to be protected. And boy, when the American people want to be protected, they frequently turn to government. Even those that don't like government, they turn to government.
And the framers, in their wisdom, put a word in the Fourth Amendment, I believe, called unreasonable.
Right.
Right? So that opens up the whole thing to what's reasonable and what isn't, and that's why the courts are involved.
And let's have that debate.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just because everybody is clamoring for it after something like 9-1-1, just because you react in a panic and pass something doesn't mean it's constitutional. It just means everybody wanted it.
But the point is, if you believe that it's unconstitutional, no one is pressing the constitutionality of this issue. What we're talking about is this was a program that was put in place immediately following 9/11. There was popular support, Republicans and Democrats, for it. Nobody was standing up and clamoring for it. Not only that, according to at least what Dick Cheney said today, the 40 leading members of Congress were all aware of it. They were briefed on it every couple of years. So if there was a Democrat or a Republican, whoever the leadership was, Nancy Pelosi, I'll put her in that list, you know, she was aware of all this stuff going on. Now, she may think it's a horrible thing now. But in the light of day, even some of the most left-wing people in her home district, in the wake of 9/11, they wanted their butts protected. And that's the climate. And what I'm saying is that the Patriot Act was passed during that climate. We're now several years later. We should have a reexamination, a serious reexamination of the Patriot Act, and do it with cooler heads and with less public pressure. I mean, you know, the government, you know, or the people. I mean, and sometimes the pressure from the people is not necessarily the wisest pressure. And I think we know that. You know, the idea of three strikes and you're out in the 1970s sounded like a great idea until our prisons got so large that you can't even treat people. And we've become a nation of over-incarceration. Well, that's the reaction when government reacts to the people. But that's what government is supposed to do. Yeah, it's supposed to lead in some way, but also be reactive.
It helps if we elect people to the U.S. Congress and to the Senate, to the U.S. House and the Senate, who are hardworking, thoughtful, committed people. One of the things we found out about this, they knew they were briefed. A lot of them weren't briefed because they didn't bother to be briefed. There was a big briefing today.
I mean, Friday there was a huge briefing on the NSA, and everybody flew out of town. The caller.
And by the way, that this is history repeating itself.
Right.
At the core of the oversight, you know, when they talked about the oversight back in the 1970s, the Church Commission, the Pike Commission in the House, when they looked into all the first revelations of all these issues that now are back in the news again 40 years later, it came down to how aggressive were the oversight. And you know what? They didn't want to know. Barry Goldwater was one, okay? And you know I'm a fan of Barry Goldwater's. Barry Goldwater was on the Oversight Committee. You know what? He didn't want to know. He didn't want to ask the hardball questions. You don't want to know.
Well, you know, there
and by the way, I would say that Mike Rogers, who I generally think is a pretty good guy, but I don't believe that having a former FBI director as the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, right. I don't think he's going to aggressively ask the questions that the vast majority of the people in the United States want asked.
Or
because
even,
he can't do it, culturally or, can't do it.
Or even do the background work that it takes to be, before I go out and interview somebody in my, you know, small job in this world, I spend maybe an hour trying to find out everything that I can about that person so that I ask the right questions.
And you know,
and
you
Google them.
And before that, I would be in the microfilm room of the main library doing it on microfilm.
And people but, in government don't have the time to do that because they're busy fundraising, which
busy
is now the
right,
name of the game.
Right.
And because of, at least in Illinois, and I'm sure there's other states as well, have got these the ways of redistricting where they're custom made for specific people who are not necessarily thinkers or people who are going to spend time. They're there for any number of reasons, none of which are acceptable.
But also
okay?
one point.
And so you get right. that they don't have time. Okay.
Right. When you were talking about the quality of people, I mean, one of the complaints that I heard was again when they had these briefings, this was after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
The members of Congress who were briefed and a substantial portion were briefed. They couldn't bring their staff. So they went in there
and they couldn't
figure it out because
right.
the staff was smarter than they were. So
right. no.
that's what we get. We're going to go back to calls. Let's go to Scott listening to us in Cleveland, Ohio on the internet. Scott, watch what you say.
Hi.
It's being
hi.
Listened to.
Oh, hi, Mr. Dumont. Thanks for having me on. I enjoy the show. I've been saying now for years to all my friends and family that we've been listening to by NSA, CIA. It's not a surprise to me, to be honest. All of our text messages, emails, and everything.
Right.
It's all being recorded in a database in Utah, a new facility. Anyway, though, what I want to ask you guys is this. Questions are being ignored about the Boston bombing. Nobody's talking about the FBI train bomb drill that was going on that day. It's been completely ignored by the media. Why were runners being told that a bomb squad drill was going to take place just hours before the marathon? These are important questions. And you know what? Where is the evidence of the Sarnaevs even doing this? I want to see the evidence. I want to know why he's under lockdown and why nobody can get a hold of him. I want to know why there were private contractors standing with large backpacks and they're being ignored.
All right, Scott,
I don't want to sound crazy.
Scott, let me just stop you for a second, okay? Because there's a lot of people you may not have heard, but you probably could have heard eyebrows being raised as you were talking. So let me make sure that I am hearing what you're suggesting. Do you believe that Boston happened or was allowed to happen so that there would be the public reaction which we are dealing with right now? That this is another example, oh, my God, we don't want our lives in America to be disrupted because look how we reacted to Boston and it was two young punk kids. What would happen if there was a far larger conspiracy? And so what you're saying is,
I believe it was a false flag.
But what I'm saying, so go ahead.
I don't want you guys to think I'm out there or crazy. I'm a young man. I'm an American. I love the country, but I see our Constitution being shredded to pieces. You know, we're funding Al Qaeda right now in Syria. We're actually funding rebel groups under Al Qaeda flag.
All right, before we get too far afield, I want to stick to how you think we perceive of you, and all I'm just saying is, I want to make sure that I've heard you correctly. Do you believe that Boston was allowed someone in authority allowed Boston to happen? Do you
okay.
believe that?
In my opinion, based on research and knowledge of past events such as Operation Northwoods, go ahead and Google that, everybody listening, that's Operation Northwoods. Our government has been involved with false flags, the Gulf of Tonkin,
I just thank you very much. I wanted to put it in context, and for those that are listening around the country, I mean, you are not alone in that belief. There are people that believe that 9/11 was known by the government and was allowed to happen so that we had the reaction that we're talking about tonight. The Gulf of Tonkin was allowed to happen. The Kennedy assassination was allowed to happen. Pearl Harbor was allowed to happen. I mean, this is not a new concept, but you're putting it in context with what happened in Boston. Let's go to Auburn, Illinois, where Chris is listening to us, also on the Internet tonight. Go ahead.
Evening, everybody. You know, we keep hearing, well, the NSA or whoever stopped this and they stopped that and whatever. We honestly will never know what they did stop and what they didn't. My problem comes in that the KGB actually called him up on the phone twice and said, hey, you got this guy in Boston that you got a problem with. And, you know, look how that ended up. I'm having a real hard time believing that what they're doing right now is really protecting us.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a problem, I think, with the FBI. I mean, they killed a witness a couple of weeks ago. I shouldn't be laughing. I mean, they killed a guy who was apparently unarmed in an interview situation. I mean, that's just really bad. That's very unprofessional. And it seems like most of the FBI stings on security have been people that they've set up to help make what they thought was a bomb. It turned out it was a ruse, you know, which is kind of unimpressive, really. So I make no case for the FBI.
And I think what's important here, if we listen to these people who are talking about false flag operations, I mean, there was the Reichstag fire. There was the Gulf of Tonkin. Governments from the beginning of time have come up with ideas to, wait a minute, what? I mean, they time the release of news. There's a reason why people are suspicious about Benghazi and about the IRS and all these other things. And I think what's important here, last time I saw a poll, 36% of the people in the country still think 9/11 was an inside job. 37% of the people think that aliens are among us already. You know, and these are not people with, you know, low IQs sitting on some, you know, meth trip off the trailer park. These are some people who actually have real, honest-to-goodness jobs and run companies. So it's a very complex society in a complex situation.
That was Bruno Barron. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289, wherever you're listening. We were talking about earlier in the broadcast is whether or not you believed Edward Snowden was a traitor or a hero. We'd like to get reaction to that, getting lots of calls. A lot of calls tonight from the Internet. John McCarron joins us. He is an adjunct professor of journalism at DePaul University, one of the great Jesuit universities of the United States. And for many years, over 30 years, a reporter and a member of the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune, and occasionally you still offer your thoughts and opinions there.
I think those people at DePaul consider themselves to be Vincentians, Loyola up the street.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I pull that back. My Protestantism has just come seeping through in that thing.
They all look alike.
They all look alike. A Jesuit, they all look alike. Carol Felsenthal also joins us. She is an author of numerous books, including one on Bill Clinton in exile. Bill Clinton was at the Museum of Broadcast Communications just a couple of nights ago here, the Young President's Association. So we had the president in the house. And she is a blogger for Chicago Magazine and also written in numerous books. The Hill. Chicago and The Hill, right?
And both of them. Both.
So you're right. So you blog for, you know, whatever.
She's there.
And many years ago, wrote a book on teenage suicide.
Yep.
I remember that.
Not my favorite book.
About 30 years ago.
And still valid.
Bruno Barron also joins us. He is with the Heartland Institute, where education reform is one of his major areas of expertise. Judy Bartopinka joins us. She is the state comptroller of Illinois, and for many years she was the state treasurer. Three terms. Wanted to be governor.
Yep.
The voters said no. They made a huge mistake. They elected
Rod Blagojevich.
They reelected Rod Blagojevich in one of the great smear jobs in Illinois political history. But that's
there's a guy who was wiretapped.
Yes. Yes.
I'm a Democrat. I crossed over for Judy.
Thanks, John.
Me?
You know, we might have been able to save Illinois at that point. I don't know now if it's salvageable. That's worries me. It's so deep in mess. So deep.
And we are now going to go back to the internet where St. Louis is calling. Paul, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. I was interested in this. The issue of privatizing the NSA is what it seems a real danger to me. If you look at the idea that the government is basically giving immunity to these corporations to gather our identities. Now, if you can imagine identity theft, they've taken all of our eggs and put them into one basket with this giant data center in Utah. And then all it takes is one rogue within that whole privatized operation to steal everybody's identities. It seems so insane, but they've gone ahead and they've spent God knows how many billions to build a couple of buildings. I mean, when was the last time you heard about a $100 million building? But they've spent billions on a building.
But what you're talking about, Paul, and I talked about this, you know, in the last segment or a couple of segments ago, is this. What's happened is, I think, as a society, I think we have become seduced by technology. Certainly young people have become seduced by it. And so, you know, you don't, I mean, the point is, you know, they know how much gas you put in your car. Anytime you charge anything, they're creating a profile of you. Visa and MasterCard, they know all about you. And again, if records are being subpoenaed by the government, or court order is asking them to turn those records over, which I'm sure happens from time to time in criminal investigations or in any investigation. If the government asks you to do something and you are a, you know, major American corporation, or even if you're a minor American corporation, there is so much fear of the government. How many people and how many corporations and how many corporate CEOs are going to stand up and say no? I mean, look what we have now this past week with the leaders of Google and all these other major behavioral related companies that we have. No one is going to say no to the government.
There's a really important thing here, and I think this is. You know, I keep on. You hear all these complaints, then you start thinking about what could there be that might be a solution. And I think one solution might be, and some, maybe this isn't Rand Paul's act, maybe it isn't, but one solution should be that every single person in the United States of America, every American citizen, should have the right to review his own file in Utah, whatever Utah is. We all know that right. It's a big boogeyman. But whatever file is in Utah, whatever's in there, we ought to at least own our own file. And that is to say, what's in it? How many times has it been accessed? Who has it been accessed by, and how it's been used? And that alone could be a compromised position that says, as a citizen, you have the right to see your own file.
What you've asked for was a derivative of the investigations in the 1970s. You had the ability to do that, okay?
Right.
And I'll tell you, because I was told by someone that there was a file kept on me in the early part of my career when this subject, I mean, I had a daily radio program mm-hmm. when all of these revelations in the 1970s came out. And I was told that the CIA had a regular, that recording my show was a regular thing because of the guests that I had on that program.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
The reason why I did not file, because at that point I assumed, well, if I'm going to ask for the file, they're going to redact anything that they think is going to be
redacted.
You know,
yeah,
redacted.
And you could file a FOIA request
yeah.
on your own file, and people have done that to headlines over the last couple of decades. I think that's an interesting idea now. But this afternoon, I was looking for furniture for a deck. Back deck at our house, and within about 10 minutes, I was getting advertising popping up for all the companies mm-hmm. that sell outside furniture. That creeps me out. It's always creeped me out. How do they?
Well,
because Google Analytics knows where you're going to go.
Right.
Sure. Again, if you go to particular sites, you know, if you're a White Sox season ticket holder like I am, I'm getting things from Major League Baseball. I'm getting things from people that sell, you know, sports memorabilia. I mean, those things just pop up.
Now, the bright side to that, though, the bright side to that, last week Visa called and said, did you charge something in Yonkers, New York? Because it doesn't fit my profile. They know where I go. They know where I, you know, that I'll be in Springfield. Those are okay.
Now, did you like that or hate that?
I can see why you'd like it. I liked it. I liked it. But I also.
Seduced by technology. We're being seduced.
I also knew that they knew where I wasn't. Okay? And that's something to be said for that, too. They know me so well, they know that they can pop me out anytime.
And that's right. And now when you put your GPS, they'll tell you exactly where you went and where you go.
And that's not good.
John, are you worried about it? You're a reporter. I mean, you know, I don't get a sense that you're maybe as outraged as the rest of the table.
I mean, one thing I find curious is most people have accepted that this is being done to us commercially, that anytime I go on Amazon, it tells me that what I bought last and what I might want to buy next, it's associated with, you know, if you bought a shirt, well, maybe you like these ties.
Sure, right,
And that's sort of okay. I mean, that's the private sector. That's free enterprise at work. American capitalism, go fight, win. But as soon as the government gets a court order to start doing some of these things,
but Carol, I don't think Carol likes that idea.
No,
Carol just said she doesn't like the idea.
She said it was creepy.
But buying chairs for our deck, like, that's a totally wholesome pursuit. But what if I had some kind of medical issue and I'm Googling some... You know,
and then all the pharmaceutical companies start pounding.
Or if you're on a porn site. I mean, the most popular thing on the internet, folks, it is not education. It's not Wikipedia. The most popular thing on the internet is pornography.
Sure.
Worldwide.
If you say so.
And does, well, I think we know that from all kinds of reports.
It always has been.
And does anyone believe...
They only visit the porn sites for the articles.
Oh, they had the old Playboy argument.
Playboy article, right?
The government has the ability to analyze every aspect. Anything that is said or anything that you do on the internet can be, and in many cases may be, certainly with a court order, can be looked into. And again, I think where Judy and the rest of this is where we may disagree, John, is I just believe that is the abilities of technology. The abilities of technology with the curious mind of a low-level person, I think if you have the ability to do something, you're going to do it.
And
you're
the friend of the friend who asks you to do it. Because, again, and you got the clout, you got the network, you got the contact, you call, and you get it. So you also get the precedent of this, and I'm, we're not exempt.
By the way, let me just ask this question to everybody. If you personally... had the ability, and I'm gonna think of a scenario. Well, I'm gonna just think of it. If you had the ability right now, Carol, to listen in on the phone conversations of the President of the United States, would you do it?
Well, you know, and that has actually been a subject of discussion of what does this go all the way up to the Supreme Court and the
Listen? This is between the five of us. Let's pretend would you listen in on it?
You know, I don't know. I don't know whether
come on,
I would.
Carol,
you're a reporter. I'm a reporter.
Bruno, would you listen in?
It's a tough one. I'd like to think that I wouldn't, but if it was the President of the United States, I probably
would.
Would you listen in?
I'd like to think I wouldn't, but the curiosity in my old reporter days, I'd probably be listening.
John, would you listen in?
Not if it were illegal.
Well, if it's illegal, no.
That's another subject. But this story.
What about if you wouldn't get caught?
Come on, John. Fess up. I would listen in.
I'm going to give you a quick answer. I would listen in.
Yeah.
I don't like the concept. I would hate it if they did it to me. But you know what? I'd listen in. And that's what I'm saying. Curiosity. The technological ability to do something is going to lead people to do it. Back shortly, 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're going to head west to the city of mansions, Spokane, Washington. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're going to go to calls in just a moment, but I asked this question a little bit earlier, but at least a couple of people sort of avoid it. I'm going to ask this question and give me a yes or no answer. It appears that based on what the Google Council was referring to, is that Google and the major search engines and Facebook that they provide information on criminal investigations, criminal requests, not just national security requests. Where do you come down on the use of this gathered information to be used in criminal cases, Judy?
You know, this is all welling up my former background, my journalism background.
Yeah, just be a reporter.
Reporting, because I really just thrived on facts and things that you were getting. And it just stirs it all up again, and chasing fire engines, except that's really passé now. Yeah. Now, you know, I'm seduced by the technology. So I like the idea on the one hand that we're kind of flushing out criminality, but you've already opened another door, and then that door leads to another door and another door. And pretty soon everything is out there, and then I go right back to what bugs me about all of this, the old Big Brother routine.
Bruno, do you want yes or no? Do you want this information? It's the
criminal investigations.
Criminal investigations.
I'm with John McCarron on this with a caveat. The answer is yes, use it for criminal investigations, but we need to revisit nationally, in a national debate, what the Fourth Amendment is and what it isn't, and to that impact, if it's gone under the proper processes, then use it to catch criminals.
Criminal investigation, should all of these abilities be able to listen in? Because when I use the IRS as an example, but again, there's criminal based on internet pornography and internet traffic. They get these records. They subpoena these companies, and the companies turn over the records.
You know, theoretically, you can look at it and think, well, we want to get the bad guys, let's do it. And then as soon as you relate it to somebody who you know or care about or like, maybe somebody in your family, maybe a friend, and then you think, boy, that's overreach, which is exactly the response that I had the other day to that DNA decision, and that if you're arrested, mm-hmm. they can take your DNA. It seems like really out of Orwell, and it seems very
scary. So if they
scary.
Get the bad guy, the bottom line here is, John,
but not always,
if they get
not
the bad guys, it's okay. Whether the bad guys are terrorists or whether they're child pornographers or whatever the case may be, if you get the bad guys, it's okay.
If the cops or the prosecutor was able to convince a judge that there was probable cause to execute the whatever the tap
then
was,
it's okay.
Then it's okay.
Okay. That's okay.
Mark, listening to us on Sirius Satellite Radio tonight, driving in Milwaukee. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I've actually gone through that process as an assistant U.S. attorney of getting a wiretap authorization, and it takes a lot of work. You need to prepare an affidavit and a motion. You have to submit that to Maine Justice for approval. There's usually edits they require. You have to take that to a judge who may want changes. And even after that, when you do the wiretap, you have to do things like minimize the listening, where you're going to pop in and out of the conversation. You have to sit on it at all times. That's what our law has come to require of prosecutors in criminal cases, to protect people's privacy. And now that there's this alternative route that's popped up where you can just suck up all communications and pick and choose what you want to use, that gap tells us that things have changed an awful lot, and probably not for the better.
Can you speak to the concern that I've expressed a couple of times this evening, that you know, you and John talk about, okay, you're dotting I's, you're crossing T's, you're doing everything the law says you're supposed to do, and technology is involved in it. But there may be some people who didn't go to law school. They don't have the sophistication. They may not have the fear or the respect for law as you do. They're the guy. They're the people that literally, you know, put the pieces in place to play, you know, to play the technology. Would you acknowledge that there is concern that some of those people may not have the same level of legal concern that you do, and because the technology is there, human nature is curious, just like we just had this conversation. If we could listen in on the president, you'd probably listen on the president, too, if you could.
Yeah. No, well, okay. I mean, absolutely. Part of the problem here is that terrorism falls into a gap between intelligence and crime. When people fly planes into a building, it's terrorism, but it's an intelligence problem. It's also a crime. Right. And when things fall in that gap, we've always struggled to define the rules. If you think, you know, you're there in Chicago, Al Capone, he waged crime by means of war. He controlled territory. He had soldiers. Right. He was international. And we didn't know how to deal with it in a way that, you know, fit the Constitution and yet was effective. And we're right back there in that same place. We're looking at something, international terrorism, that falls in that gap. And we're struggling with how to deal with it. And one of the problems is that there's the temptation to do it the easy way. That doesn't respect the Constitution. I think that's some of what we're glimpsing now.
In your particular case, the question we asked at the beginning of the program, Edward Snowden, is he a traitor, is he a hero, or do you put him somewhere in between?
Well, sometimes traitors are heroes in some respects. It depends on how you define heroism. He's certainly someone who put what he thought was right above risk to himself. Now, a lot of people who have done that for evil reasons as well. In that sense, I suppose he would fit hero in that he's probably going to be brought before the law. He's having to live as a fugitive. He didn't have to do any of that, but for the fact he wanted to bring what he felt was important truths to bear.
Right.
Now, of course, traitors often do that as well. Right. So there's overlap.
Yep. So he might have done the right thing, but again, a true patriot or a true hero would have stayed behind and paid the price, as many patriots have. On that note, thank you very much for your most enlightened conversation. It's always good to hear from former prosecutors listening to this program. Bruno Barrett has been with us tonight. Carol Felsenthal, John McCarron, Judy Bartopinka, great conversation tonight. Thank you very much for joining us. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio in Chicago. Thanks to Tom Vera Cruz and Todd Nebel and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.